Hey everyone, welcome to Just Mental Health with Stefan M, the podcast where we discuss mental health issues through a social justice lens. I'm Emily.
And I'm Stephanie. A quick disclaimer before we get started, we are mental health professionals, but this is not to be taken as professional advice.
We are also aware that our privilege may cloud our perspective on some topics, and we not only welcome, but encourage you to message us with criticism and correction. Let's get started. All right. Our small business shout out is actually my dad's business. We've been doing this for like 10 months now. And it just now occurred to me that my dad is a business owner. Daughter of the year right here. Anyway, it's because his business is so out of my like understanding. That's why I didn't think of it. So he does chemical engineering consulting. It's called Gableman Process Solutions, whatever that means. I'm just kidding. provide solutions to your process engineering challenges. Okay, so I'm going to attempt to share what this is. I'm not sure how good of a job I'm going to do. Proudly serving clients in flavors, fermentation, natural products, food ingredients, and specialty chemicals. So he... Let's see. He was a chemical engineer for decades. Now helps. He has proudly served chemical and biochemical process industries since 2013 with projects that have called on a broad range of process engineering skills. So he does process technologies, process engineering skills, online, on-site training, technical writing and editing, and his website, gablemanps.com. And there's a spot on here to send a message through the website. So if that made sense to you and you are interested in his services, definitely reach out to him. His email is alan.gableman@gablemanps.com. I should specify Gableman is spelled G-A-B-E-L-M-A-N. Story of my life, people spelling my last name. All right. Moving on.
Cool. I remember you talking about your dad doing that, and I had totally forgotten about that as well. Right? But that's awesome. So we have a returning guest today. So very happy about that. If you guys have not listened to the part one for this episode, I mean, you should. It's not necessary to understand what we're going to talk about today, but it will be very helpful.
It's one of our most, I think it might not our most pop. It's one of our most popular episodes.
It is.
We've gotten really good feedback on.
Yes, it is. Because I think it's a topic that so many people are interested in. So anyways, we have Lindsay with us again today. And so just a review, Lindsay is a licensed clinical social worker with 8 years of experience as a therapist. She specializes in helping individuals recover from disordered eating and body shame. She is a health at every size informed, emphasizes body acceptance, and believes in the intuitive eating model. Her approach is eclectic, relational, and empowering. She is a therapist and co-founder of Transcend Counseling Services, and that is www.transcendcounselingservices.org. And that will be linked in the Instagram. And then she also runs the Louisville Anti-Diet Project Facebook group, which will also be linked in the Instagram. And that Facebook group, I'm in that group. And I think,
I'm are you in that group too?
Yeah, Emily is as well. And it's open for everyone. So if you're interested, even if you're not really in Louisville and you just want to learn more about anti-diet and Haze, I recommend that Facebook group as well. So thank you, Lindsay, for being here again today.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm really excited to come back and talk about this topic.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Like we said, it was it got a lot of views, plays, whatever. And we also got some feedback about it. Some people that had questions that they didn't really understand, you know, what haze was and what intuitive eating was. And
haze health at every size. Mm-hmm. Did you say the acronym already?
Yeah. Okay. Haze, HAES is health at every size. So that's what we'll mostly be talking about, that and intuitive eating today. And so as we had kind of talked in our pre-talk, we were going to focus more on the principles of haze and what they are and how they're helpful. And then kind of talk about some of the myths and some of the criticism of this movement, and go into, you know, into more detail about that. So if you're interested in that, definitely this is the podcast episode for you, and you should listen to part one. All right. So Lindsay, when we talk about haze, and I know I briefly read, you know, some of it. I know there's like 5 principles.
Yes.
Is that right? Do you mind going over what those are?
Yeah, sure. So, and I'm actually, I pulled up a website here just to help.
Mm-hmm.
I use the correct language and terminology. Mm-hmm. One of the first principles is weight inclusivity. And what this is an approach of accepting and respecting body diversity, including shape, size, proportions, and sort of this approach of rejecting the idealized or pathologized weights in our society. And then the second principle is health enhancement. This is supporting health policies that improve and equalize access to information and services, and personal practices that improve human well-being, including attention to individual physical, economic, social, spiritual, emotional, or other needs. And then the third principle is eating for well-being. So this is promoting flexible, individualized eating based on hunger, satiety, nutritional needs, and pleasure, rather than any externally regulated eating plan focused on weight control. The fourth principle is respectful care. So this is acknowledging biases and work to end weight discrimination, weight stigma, and weight bias. And life-enhancing movement is the final principle, which is support physical activities that allow people of all sizes, abilities, and interests to engage in enjoyable movement to the degree that they choose. So those are the 5 principles of health at every size, as just kind of like a general overview.
Yeah. And those sound very, I mean, you know, maybe it's just me, but when I hear those sound very common sense, like, yeah, that's great. Yeah. We should be doing that.
Why have we not been doing that all along?
Yeah. Those sound like the important things that we should be focusing on. But then other people, you know, hear that and they think, well, wait a minute. How can you say that weight is not a determinant of someone's health when we have been told this for years and years and years? And the last episode, we talked about BMI and how it was just is not accurate. It's not scientific. It doesn't prove anything. It doesn't really mean anything. But that's been the medical standard for so long, and everything seems like it goes back to weight. When you go to the doctor, and if you are overweight or obese, which are the medical terms, but you just have a higher weight, they always typically advocate for you to lose weight, and that will help whatever issue you're dealing with. Right. And so for a long time that, you know, for me, and I think a lot of people, it's like, yeah, okay. Yeah. That makes sense. So now my focus is losing weight to be healthy. And those two things are not exclusive. Losing weight does not equal health, and health does not equal a low weight, you know, or a appropriate BMI.
Right.
So, I mean, cause you work, this is what you do. You work with people, helping them with disordered eating using this model. So I'm sure they come to you with their own questions and criticisms, like, how could this, doesn't make sense. This is going against everything that I've been told. And how do you kind of explain that to them and help them understand what this approach is actually about?
Yeah, that's such a good question. And I will say that I get everyone across the board in terms of where they're at with their knowledge and awareness of health at every size or intuitive eating or disordered eating. I get anywhere from the range of like people who are very well aware and educated and knowledgeable about these issues, who are like ready to really let go of diet culture mentality, and really pursue a more balanced life around food and exercise and body image, to people that kind of like you described, they sit there and they're looking at me like I'm speaking a different language. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they come back because they're wanting to learn more and try to understand. And other times I will have a one-time session with someone and they're just not ready. And so they don't come back. And so I'm constantly fine tuning like the way that I am bringing this to people, because ultimately I have to meet everyone where they're at. But it is such a, you know, diet culture is such a monster that it's just hard to simplify it sometimes for people, because it's so pervasive within our society and it informs everything that we have learned about ourselves and have learned about health and the way that we approach eating and exercising and taking care of ourselves. You know, that it's like people, you don't know what you don't know. Right. And so it's almost like we're all walking around with these like blinders on. We don't even realize we have them on, kind of a thing. When it comes to the concept of diet culture. And one of the places that I like to start when I'm working with people and helping them to see this, because that's really the first step is really just like seeing it for what it is and understanding it and understanding its impact, is I like to help people explore their earliest memories of what they've learned about food, what they've learned about body ideals and body politics, and what they've learned about exercise and health, and just kind of what their history has been in these areas and what patterns they've noticed and what narratives they've been told, you know, what messages they've kind of inherited from their environment or the media. And then I just really like to help kind of unpack those things and really highlight the areas that make you kind of go, well, why is that, like, why is that food rule a rule? Like, and why is this all of a sudden a bad food to eat when years ago, like, no one batted an eye at it? Or, you know, so it's really just about kind of being an investigator and asking questions and challenging what we've been taught and what we know about health.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause so much of what we've been taught is like, we haven't been taught anything. Most of us don't have our internalized messages from reputable sources. Like, they're just from like our families, you know, or societies like the media or even like school, like the teachers that taught us like the food pyramid or, you know, exercise and like BMI, like they're just like high school health teacher. Like they're not like professionals in the field. And then we're walking around with this information. And it's so like, you know, there's a lot of things that we're taught that's not like the whole picture.
Right.
But this is like our bodies and our health and therefore our mental health, the way we see ourselves, something that we carry with us literally every second of every day. So to have misinformation about that is so damaging. So I so appreciate what you do.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought up the food pyramid because I was just thinking about that too. Like just in my grade school years, the food pyramid changed so many times. Mm-hmm. And this is the thing that has always confused me about nutrition and diet culture that I've never understood. And I, not to be a hypocrite, because I think I shared this on the last podcast, I was a huge proponent of diet culture. I was on the keto diet for a long time and I've tried all different sorts of diets to try to lose weight. And I realized that I had an eating disorder and that's what I was using. But one of the things that never really made sense to me was like, why is this information always changing? I know science develops and we learn new information. And so our opinions about things change and our, especially with like medical science, it's always developing. We're always learning new things. We're like, oh, we shouldn't be doing this anymore. That wasn't helping. We should be doing this instead. With nutrition, like food has been relatively the same forever. And yet every year it's like there's this new, like first it was you shouldn't eat fat. So everything was low fat. Then they realized that wasn't really helping anybody. That was bad. Then it was real big on everything was, you know, like it needs to be raw and it needs to be like, maybe you're going to do the Mediterranean diet, or maybe you've got to do like an all fruit diet or something. And then it was, especially now, this low carb keto, carbs are bad, avoid carbs at all costs. And it's like, what is happening here? Because why is it changing so much? Why is it okay? At one point, it's like, you need to eat, you know, 9 servings of whole grain a day or whatever. And now it's like, you should avoid grains at all costs. And I just don't, it doesn't make any sense to me. That has never made sense to me. And so I say all that to say, like, we cannot, these fad diets, but also just these trends in food and nutrition are not, they're generally not based in actual science. When you look into them, they're sort of taken from like one, like with the keto diet, right? So it was created to, and has been used and is helpful for children with like severe epilepsy and has helped them. But one of the side effects of the keto diet is going into ketosis and losing a lot of weight very quickly. So while it helps kids with epilepsy, it is not something that people without epilepsy really need. There's no,
I love that you described that as a side effect.
It is.
Its side effect is weight loss. That's so interesting that you said it that way.
And so people latched onto that. They're like, hey, you can lose a lot of weight on this diet. Mm-hmm. And then it became this, you know, now it's this fad thing. And so there is a reason for it. There is science behind it, but it's being applied to everyone, or saying that everyone, you know, should eat this way and lose weight. And that's just not, that's not accurate. That's not healthy to be on that diet long term.
Right. Right. Yeah. And it makes me think about that one of the big trends right now is intermittent fasting.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, when you pull back the curtain, like that is just a socially acceptable way to restrict and to deprive yourself and your body of what it needs. But it has this label of intermittent fasting. And so it sounds like it's okay. And it sounds like something that you should want to do. And, you know,
it's just skipping meals. That's literally all.
Yeah.
It just like exactly. Starve yourself. Like that's all.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Right. Yes.
Yeah. It is restriction and starvation kind of repackaged and sold as this healthy thing to do. But you know, people with eating disorders have been doing this anyways, but now they just have a label to say, oh, it's not an eating disorder. It's right. Intermittent fasting. Yeah. Oh yeah. Okay. That's somehow better.
Yes.
Yeah. So what is, cause a lot of people listening are going to hear this from like the lens of like people who don't have an eating disorder or disordered eating, but they just want to lose weight. How does this connect with eating disorders specifically is my question for you.
Okay. Can you kind of like, again, maybe in a different way, so I understand the question.
Like how do these things add to or exacerbate a person's eating disorder? Can it lead to an eating disorder? How does it treat, like intuitive eating treat an eating disorder? Like those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. Does that make
sense? Okay. Yeah. There was a lot there, I feel like, but I'll do my best. And if I veer off, you might have to bring me back. But
okay.
To answer I think the first question that you asked is yes, like disordered eating or a disordered relationship with food can lead to an eating disorder. But then at the same time, not all disordered eating behaviors or disordered relationship with food is going to meet criteria for like a clinical diagnosis of an eating disorder. But what we're noticing is that disordered eating is so prevalent because the diet industry continues to put out these trends and fad diets and misinformation. Coupled with the fact that we're kind of in this generation of wellness is a virtue right now, that if you're not preaching or pursuing wellness, and I'm using air quotes, even though it's a podcast where no one can see me except for you, is that it kind of naturally makes the general population feel like this is something that they need to be doing. And so when diet culture basically controls the definition even, or the ideas of what wellness is, people are automatically going to do whatever they're being told to do by this culture of dieting and weight loss, because dieting and weight loss has so been baked into this idea of, and the concept of health.
Mm-hmm.
Intuitive eating really is designed to do is to bring people back to their own body's natural way of communicating its needs in terms of hunger and satiety and food consumption and even exercise. It's about coming back to the basics of when we were first born as babies, when our like main focus as this little infant is to be fed and nourished and cared for. And one of the primary ways that that's done is by being like fed. And we have this innate design within us that helps us communicate that at when we're babies, us crying, right? And then we're fed. And then at some point along development, we start to fall into these social emotional traps in our culture that where we start to question our hunger, we start to question our cravings, we start to deny ourselves of things because that's what society tells us to do in order to be thin or in order to be healthy, so to speak. So that's how intuitive eating really breaks this cycle of disordered eating and dieting.
Mm-hmm. That's it, you know, yeah, I hadn't really thought of it that way, but I like how you put it, where it's kind of back to kind of how does it start? I mean, small children, you look at sort of how they feed themselves or how they ask for food if they're not able to feed themselves. And it's very simple. It's like, if I'm hungry, I'm going to eat. If I'm not hungry, I'm not going to eat. And I remember being a kid and not being worried about, mm-hmm. you know, is this, how many calories is in this popsicle? Like, I wanted a popsicle, I ate a popsicle, but I also, you know, was like content with just eating a popsicle and moving on. There wasn't that, mm-hmm. like you said, that social and emotional, those complications that come in and make something as basic and as, you know, important to your survival as eating and getting nourishment. And so from what I understand, you know, from intuitive eating is that it's saying, you know, your body, we've evolved, been designed, you know, whatever you believe, mm-hmm. to our body gives us cues for what it needs, and it knows what it needs, and it's been doing this for years and years and years and years and years and years and years. And there's a reason why we are, you know, the apex predators, and we are now bipeds, and we have thumbs, and you know, all these things, because we've been doing it right at some point. So why are we complicating it now? Your body lets you know when you're tired. It lets you know when you need to go to the bathroom, and it lets you know when you're hungry and thirsty.
Right.
And if we just can listen to those cues and sort of trust that our body is going to tell us what it needs, mm-hmm. you know, then that's sort of the basis of intuitive eating.
Is that right? Yeah. And that's actually like the foundational, one of the foundational principles of intuitive eating. The first one is to reject diet culture, and then comes practicing permission with food and listening to your body's cues and honoring your hunger. And the reason that is because as things are right now in diet culture, we approach food with a lot of head knowledge, right? I'm kind of like visualizing like all of us walking around as just like these heads of people. But all this head knowledge we have is all like confusing and misinformation, but it's all like, you know, don't eat this and eat that. And if you eat that, then you better burn that off. And, you know, all this knowledge about health and nutrition and exercise. But it's all just a bunch of like noise, right? And it really clouds our ability to be in tune with our body's cues. And not only does it kind of cut off that line of communication, you know, between our mind and our body, but it's also hard to just like nourish ourselves adequately when we're following all these trends external food rules that are put onto us. And so that's why intuitive eating starts with this groundwork of coming back into our bodies, listening to our bodies, tuning in, practicing that food permission and honoring your hunger, but also listening to when you're full. And then, but it goes deeper than that. And that's kind of like one of the misconceptions that I kind of wanted to really bring up and hash out today is intuitive eating is not anti-health. And I'm using air quotes again, because health is like this weird word, but whatever, we can get into that later. But intuitive eating is not anti-nutrition. It's not anti like eating well. What it is we're laying this groundwork that we have spent so much time diluting, that in order to be able to reapply nutrition in the proper way and in the way it was designed to be applied, which in intuitive eating, they call this gentle nutrition, which to your point earlier, Stephanie, is like, you know, you talked about how food has been the same for decades and decades and decades, centuries even. And I would argue that basic nutrition, when you really drill it down to like the very fine details, all of that has been the same as well, right? It's really the way that diet culture has kind of like twisted and turned a lot of the nutritional information over the centuries and decades that has been inconsistent, if that makes sense. So, but kind of veering back into the point I wanted to make about intuitive eating is not just eat whatever you want, however you want, whenever you want. It is, but it is also doing that in a way in which your mind and body are actually working together like a machine, and like the machine that they're supposed to be, where we are intuitively nourishing ourselves with information about nutrition in a very gentle, flexible way, which then kind of helps really kind of decrease and eliminate a lot of the food guilt and food shame that comes with non-intuitive eating, if that makes sense. So
it sounds sort of like mindfully eating whatever you want, like eating what you want, but still carrying a sense of what do I feel? What does my body need? Like, not just like, ooh, look at all the food. Like, I'm just going to eat all of it. But like, okay, I can eat this food if I want to eat it. But, you know, am I hungry? Is this what I feel like my body needs? Okay, I'm eating the food. Am I still hungry? Should I keep eating? Am I full? Like, is that accurate description?
Yes. Yes. I like the way you described that and put that. I would also add to that, that it is also okay and still within the realm of intuitive eating, if you're also like planning ahead for what you might need, you know what I mean? So like, if I know I'm going to be in a meeting for 2 hours over lunch, I can use the knowledge of, okay, I either need to like pack a snack or something that I can use or, you know, eat before the meeting, or maybe I need to have a little more protein in my breakfast so that I feel more sustained for a longer period of time. Because we know that when we wait until we're like ravenously, if that's a word, hungry,
yeah,
that's when we are at risk for not making intuitive decisions about what we're eating. And we just kind of like, you might overeat, or you might choose things that aren't sustainable for you or really helpful for you in that moment. You know what I mean?
Right. Because it becomes a necessity at that moment. Your body is like, I am so hungry. You're going to put anything into it you can get.
Right.
And in those moments, people tend to choose a high sugar high calorie dense foods because you're trying to get full, you're trying, but then it's your hunger cues have been thrown off because it's not just I'm hungry, I'm ready to eat now. It's I'm starving, I have to eat something.
Right.
And so, you know, and that kind of goes, if that's the cycle that you're doing all the time with restriction and then eating, binging, or just overeating or whatever in those moments of that, you know, extreme need, that's keeps that cycle going for that disordered eating. And it throws off those internal cues of what is enough, what do I need? And you don't learn, you forget what being full, but not, you know, just over full or being satiated, but you know, whatever, you forget what that feels like. And so then it's just either ravenous hunger or being so full you're uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And those become the two things that you associate with, you know, with food. So yeah, I like that you said, because those were, there were two things that I was gonna, you know, ask about that are very common criticisms about this is that, you know, you said it is about nutrition. It's not about like nutrition doesn't matter, or there's no such thing as eating for nutrition, because that's really the whole point, is that you want to eat to fuel your body, to give your body all of everything that it needs and not deprive it of the things that it needs. But you're talking about breaking down first all of those rules and all of the like really propaganda that you get from diet culture. Mm-hmm. And by part of doing that is sort of this, like, there's no restriction, because you're not, if you start putting the restriction on things, then that just feeds the problem even more. That just keeps the issue going. So you're breaking that down, and then you're sort of building from, okay, now let's talk about what nutrition actually is and what it is for you, because we also know bodies need different things. Different exactly. bodies need different things, and not everybody can eat the same way or needs to eat the same way.
Exactly. Yes. And that's a really good point. That's something else that's been kind of really transformative, I think, in terms of just the content that's been kind of circulating, is even if we were all following the same exact diet and the same exact exercise plan, we would all still look vastly different and unique, because we all have a different genetic makeup, and that informs our body's build and shape and size so much more than what we're eating and what we're burning on a daily basis.
Yeah. It's like those pictures that are like, it's all these women with different body shapes and different heights, and they're like, all of these women weigh 145 pounds, you know, and it's like they mm-hmm. all look so different. Mm-hmm. So that just the weight, just the number, means nothing as far as how your body's going to look.
Exactly.
And then so the other myth that we hear a lot with Hayes and intuitive eating, is that no matter your size, you are healthy. No matter your weight, you are healthy. And I know health is a sort of a nuanced term, because there's a lot behind that as well. But I think some people feel the idea of Hayes, when it says health at every size, is that it's saying every size is healthy and okay to be at. And so you can correct me if I'm wrong. It's not about, Hayes is saying, it's not about the size, it's about the health. And we want to take the health and the determinants of that health separate from the size. And that you can't judge someone's health based on their size. Like I had shared a post earlier, I was reading this article and in it, you know, they talked about if you're going to, if you want to determine if someone has, you know, a healthy blood sugar level, you can't judge that based on how much they weigh. You have to take their blood and test their blood sugar level. And so we should be determining health based on those factors and not just someone's size.
Right.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It does.
Would you
say, Emily?
Huh?
I saw your wheels turning, so I was just wondering what you were.
I mean, yeah. So would you say that size, because that's the biggest response I get when I talk about this with people is like, yeah, but your weight is an indicator of your, of health. And I'm like, okay, but it's not the only indicator and it's not nearly as important as we think it is. Like, I'll give you my answer and you tell me if it's right. So I usually say like, sure, it's like maybe factored into a person's quote wellness or health, but it's not the only thing. And there's so much more to it. And there's plenty of people who are in bigger bodies that do like move their bodies more than people in smaller bodies, eat more variety of foods than people in smaller bodies, you know, take better care of their mental health and like all of these things. But the person's going to automatically judge the bigger bodied person mm-hmm. as unhealthy. Basically what I tell them is like, there's more, it's one factor, but it's not the ultimate factor. Is that the right answer?
Yeah, I think great answer. And that is, and I've said very similar things to people. And I like to even say that weight is just one of many variables to consider when talking about someone's health. But it is often, when you really look at the facts, it is often the least telling thing about someone's health.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so so that's kind of like one of the other myths. And from what I've read, the idea is that it's Hayes pretty much, you know, it started as sort of an answer to why people in larger bodies were not getting the appropriate medical care and the discrimination they were facing against medical professionals, because medical professionals were looking at their weight as the determinant of health and ignoring these other things. But instead of like, okay, yeah, you know, weight can be correlated and connected to health issues, it is not the only thing that causes health issues. And so, you know, you can have high blood pressure and be a very thin person, and you can have high blood pressure and be a larger person. And there are other things that affect your high blood pressure or your blood pressure than just the number on the scale. So
exactly,
if you're not looking at everything else that's going on, then you're not really, you're not treating the person as a whole. You're just treating that number.
That's right. Yeah.
And people, sorry, go on.
Well, I was just going to say, and you know, the other layer to that is that it's a very, like the medical model and, you know, the diet culture's influence on measurement of health is very oppressive to individuals who don't have access to, let's say, a gym membership, you know, mm-hmm. increase their physical activity in that way to lose weight, or maybe access to, you know, food that would support a more balanced, you know, diet that incorporates fruits and vegetables and fresh, you know, fresh produce, you know, not like not right. everyone has access.
Like all the food deserts that are in the US, all of the places where people can't go to a grocery store because it's miles and miles away and there's no grocery stores in their area, that's going to impact their health in multiple ways.
Yeah, the biggest indicator of life expectancy is zip code. I don't know if you guys knew that. Oh my gosh,
yes.
And I think that's, I mean, that's a, I was actually thinking we could do an episode on why that is, but
That would be interesting.
Yeah, I think probably a big part of that is, you know, communities like low-income communities, maybe communities of color, you know, where the access to these resources, even like learning about intuitive eating, getting help with intuitive eating, having access to, you know, these variety of foods, access to a gym, like you said, is really, you know, is difficult. So, but you were, I think we cut you off.
You're good. Yeah.
I think that's, you know, that's really the kind of the social justice piece of it. And I know like Hayes started, you know, very much a focus for, you know, white women, like a lot of things have, but it has evolved and developed into, you know, incorporating, look, the people that need this the most are the people that experience the most discrimination with their medical care. People in brown and black bodies, people, you know, of indigenous origin, people who don't fit that, the Caucasian, you know, Western model, which is sort of what BMI and our health standards are based off of. That's just not applicable for people who aren't of Western Caucasian descent. So it's definitely expanded into that, but you're right. There's so many other, other things that can help people with their health that they may not have access to. And so by sort of, I guess, preaching to someone like, well, you need to exercise more and lose this amount of weight, like that just may not be possible for them in that moment. Also, not even considering, you know, if you live, depending on your zip code, if it's a zip code where there is a lot of crime, and then there's a lot of stress, people who live in those areas experience a lot more stress, a lot more trauma, a lot more PTSD, which affects your health in so many different ways.
Yes.
And that's just not something that you can just exercise out, you know, or eat enough fruit and that goes away. I mean,
right.
Just eat more fruit and everything's
and
better.
Your trauma's gone.
but not too much fruit because it has too much sugar in it and you don't want to have sugar. Like,
exactly.
Oh my gosh. I saw this thing briefly the other day on Instagram and I'll mention it even though I don't like have a whole lot of expertise in this area. It was a post that a dietitian made on Instagram that I follow. And she basically was, you know, sharing that there are molecularly, there are only two structures of sugar, monosaccharides and disaccharides, I think. And your body doesn't know the difference between the two. And added sugar versus natural sugar, because, you know, the big push right now is like, don't eat too much added sugar or whatever. Your body doesn't know the difference between those and processes them and absorbs them and breaks them down in the same way.
Oh my God. My dad, speaking of my dad's business. And so he worked in chemical engineering with food flavors.
Yeah.
He would love that you said that. He hates when people like differentiate between natural and added sugar.
Oh my gosh.
One of his biggest pet peeves.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just found that so interesting. So I intend to kind of like dig into that a little bit more, because that's something I had not heard before. So yeah, I just thought that was so.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of those things. So I remember hearing that when I was, you know, a part of the keto cult. Because it really was. Sometimes it was like, okay, is this a diet or is this a freaking religion now? But they say that too, and that's why they say you're not supposed to eat fruit. And I'm like, how can you not eat fruit? I don't even understand that, because don't you need all those vitamins and minerals that come with fruit and the fiber? I mean, where are you gonna get that from if you're exactly. Anyways, yeah. I just never got that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I know this is, you know, this is a topic we could probably there could probably be endless amounts of episodes about this, because there's so much to unpack. But I do think it was good. We were able to go into a lot more detail about these myths or these, you know, misunderstandings about this movement. And hopefully people will sort of do their own work, their own research, read more about it. You know, just try to understand how this could be helpful for them in, you know, in their own journeys. And not listen to I feel like there's the medical community that's like misinformed and worried that this is just a movement that's like, oh, just eat whatever you want, do whatever you want. And they're like, you know, even though that's not what it's saying. And then there's just people that are just anti-fat, you know, and they just don't want fat people to feel good about anything. So, you know, distinguishing those and what is, you know, what is the science actually saying, and what is the anti-fat and the diet sort of propaganda that they push out.
Also paying attention to, you know, even if someone doesn't buy into intuitive eating and health at every size, the impact that it has on your mental health to follow these diets, is that even worth it? Like, is that like the anxiety and the stress, and honestly just like the disappointment and sadness when you want a certain food but restrict yourself from eating it, is worse on your health than following, you know, a more of an intuitive eating type of eating pattern. And that's a part of the model of like looking at health as the bigger picture. Like, it's not all about what you eat and how you move and what size you are. Like, it's your mental health too. And following these diets has such a bad impact on your mental health, whether it's associated with disordered eating or just, you know, or people who don't have disordered eating, but just want to look a certain way, or like have, you know, like maybe even obsessive thoughts or like ruminating thoughts over like, oh my God, am I like anxiety about being healthy. So it's another quick point I want
to. Yeah, I completely agree. Your happiness is also part of your health. And so if you're miserable on a diet, you need to take a look at that.
Yes.
You shouldn't be miserable when it comes to food. I mean, you just,
that's not healthy. Being miserable is not healthy. Like, for people who really want to work on their health, like, you're not healthy if you're miserable.
Yeah. Yeah. If it's something you can, you know, you can change, and you can, you know, if it's the difference between like dreading every meal and being satisfied and feeling nurtured after every meal, obviously that's going to be a big difference in the rest of your day and how you look at things. And with your proper nutrition, you can concentrate better, you can learn better, you have better emotional regulation, you know, less mood swings, better sleep. All of those things are also part of health. And so it's, That's why it's important to pay attention to the full picture of health, which is what Health at Every Size is about, from what I understand.
Yes. Well said.
Well, Lindsay, before we wrap up, is there anything else that you wanted to point out or say? I don't want us to end and you'd be like, oh man, I didn't get to say that, because I hate when that happens to me.
I know. Yeah. There's a lot that could kind of still, I mean, it's like you said, we could have hours upon hours of conversations about this because there's so many layers. There's so many sub layers. There's so many complex. But I think one thing I would want to leave with people listening is there's a bazillion resources online, on social media. And, you know, I don't think a lot of people think about focusing on their relationship, like focusing on addressing their relationship with food as often as they would addressing other, you know, issues, stress, anxiety, you know, medical things. But it's worth taking a look at if you find yourself thinking about food and thinking about health and being preoccupied and fixated on it in a way that disrupts areas of your life. Like, I would say, seek out a therapist that is Health at Every Size informed and, you know, is experienced in helping people navigate these things. And also, don't be afraid to seek out a dietitian. There are a lot of dietitians or nutritionists, which sometimes that term is used interchangeably. Sometimes I think a nutritionist cannot be a dietitian, but a dietitian can be a nutritionist. It's kind of like just a little bit of difference of education, but not all dietitians and nutritionists are focused on the medical model and losing weight and things like that. There are quite a few that are using intuitive eating and are Health at Every Size informed or certified. So I would just encourage people to look into those supports and just to continue to be open and educate themselves on these things.
Yeah. And we could even do a part 3, part 4, part 5, part 6. Like, I
mean, we could just,
yeah. Like, I mean, we love to have you, you know, how you said we could talk for hours. Like, we can talk for hours if you'd like.
We're talking. We'd love to have you.
So. Awesome. All right. Well, thank you again so much for your time and for giving your knowledge and your expertise in this area and helping educate and inform people. And we appreciate you being here.
Thanks for having me.
Of course.
That's our show. If you enjoyed this episode, please follow us on wherever you get your podcasts. And if you use Apple Podcasts, we'd appreciate a rating and review.
And don't forget to follow the show's Instagram for updates on new episodes at Just Mental Health Podcast. And that is with a period between each word. This is Steph.
And Em.
And Lindsay.
Signing off. Thanks for listening.